Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Memorial Cross near Loch Coos in Glencar. There will be a memorial and a commemoration of two anti-treaty volunteers who were killed on the 6th of April 1923, 100 years ago, during raids towards the very end of the Civil War in Kerry by pro-treaty forces. With me in our studio in Tralee to talk about this is Jim Coonan, who's a grandnephew of one of those killed, William Conway O'Connor, and also James Nagle, who is a grandnephew of George Nagle. Good morning to both of you, and thanks for joining us in the programme.
Good morning, Johnny.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Jim, if I'll start with you, tell me what happened, first of all, on the 6th of April, 1923.
Well, basically, Johnny, the IRA fellas were billeted in five houses in there in the Finn, in the valley inside in Glencar. And they had two sentries posted, and the Free State Army, which was a large army of men, maybe three battalions, and they surrounded them. And there was a fairly intensive gun battle. And it went on for considerable time, and there were a lot of bullets flying everywhere. But all the IRA, which would be maybe 20 to 30 IRA volunteers, ran from the houses. And in doing so, George Nagle came out the front door, he was shot in the leg, and William Conway O'Connor was shot in the arm, and they were taken captive. Their means of escape was kind of stopped there and then.
Yeah.
So they were taken captive by the Free State soldiers on the day. And so we believe that George Nagle was shot through the heart immediately, and they marched William away along the shores. Their comrades could see him being marched away, but by the time he reached Killoglan, they had taken a cart from a nearby shed and brought the body. The two men were more or less along the road. They were. They met some people, but the two were actually dead before George was obviously dead, and William was dead as well. So obviously something happened along the road for him to be shot.
Okay, and James, look, there's from the fighting at the time, it had been pretty intense given the numbers of Free State forces that were there, but that both, you know, William and George had fought to prevent, I suppose, most of the anti-treaty IRA being captured.
Well, they did, yeah. They fought tooth and nail, and like I said, it was unfortunate that the rest of them got away. It was unfortunate that they were wounded and they were taken away captives. Yeah. And like I said, they never reached Killoglan alive anyway. But that was the savagery at the time.
Yeah,
it was unfortunate, really. But that's the history of the whole thing.
Yeah, James Nagle, if I can ask you, look, growing up, did you know much about this engagement?
When I was quite young, I was taken down to Glencar to see the monument by the lakeside. So I think I was about 8 or maybe 10 at the time. And then my mother took me into Tralee to get a copy of The Tragedies of Kerry. And I think that had a big effect on me and kind of promoted my interest in history. But from a young age, I would have known that there was a civil war before I knew there was a war of independence.
Yeah.
And it was a very vague knowledge, and that's the kind of knowledge that existed within the family and existed within many families in the aftermath of the Civil War. They knew that an ancestor had done something, but it wasn't really spoken about, and the family had very little actual solid information to go on. And a lot of that is changing now with the Bureau of Military History files that are being released and the pension applications, seeing the handwriting of my great-grandfather as he applies for a pension for his son and applies for a gratuity payment. So it's great to see the amount of research that's coming out now, and that's kind of bringing the story more to life.
Did he get it?
He applied in 1923 and was rejected out of hand, applied to the Free State government. He applied again then in 1932 when Fianna Fáil came to power.
Mm.
And it was a long and protracted campaign. He received £75 of a gratuity in the mid-1930s. Now, George was making £4 per week at Bailey's, just around the corner from where we are now, at 17 the Mall. And he had 12, he was one of 12 children, George, so it was a large family. Five of them immigrated to the United States, including his sister Joan, who'd been a commandant in the Cumann na Mban. She'd been basically driven from her job after the Civil War, and that was again a something that happened to very many people. But a pension was issued about a year after John died and a year before his wife Mary died.
Yeah.
In the late 1940s.
Okay. Jim Coonan, when did you first find out about William?
Well, at a very young age, it wasn't so much my grandmother. My grandmother refused to talk about the War of Independence and the Civil War, but it was my Auntie Phil. My Auntie Phil obviously was very close to my grandfather, and I'd say he confided in her a lot. And it was mostly her from a young age, because we were very close to her, because my own mother died young with cancer, so she was kind of our second mother.
Yeah.
And she was a hive of information. The information, she was so much information about the War of Independence and the Civil War from my grandfather, that Martin Ferris and Martin Moore, the historian, used to call on a regular basis to her house in Shanakil to learn as much as they could about those times.
Yes, yeah. So fascinating, and a repository holding on to, I suppose, that information until people and society was better able to examine it and talk about it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And like, she was 77 when she died, and she's dead now 20 years. So, like, she was all through her life, she was a lovely, quiet person. She was non-political person, but she kept the history alive. And I used to often say to her, we should be writing things down, Auntie Phil. And she used to always say, am I telling you?
Yeah.
That's the way they were at the time.
That is the way they were at the time. Listen, Jim, both men were very young. 19 mm-hmm. and 21. It was a young man's war. A young man, a young woman's war.
It was a young man's war and a young woman's war. It was brother against brother. It was cousin against cousin. It was sister against sister. Families never really recovered. They fell out, and they stayed that way for forevermore. But basically, it was. I think the young people in the Republican side of this, they were convinced that they were right, and they were going to keep fighting to the bitter end, and there was going to be a republic. And the other side, then you had the Free State, which were young. The Free State people were young, and they had the same idea that look, we have this is a stepping stone. We take what we're after getting. So I suppose, like, you had two people with fierce ideas.
Yeah, and hard to reconcile them.
Right.
That's why the violence came out of it. Mm-hmm. James Nagle, what have you made, I suppose, of the centenaries, how they've been handled and how things are being talked about now?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think the most successful area has been from the kind of the historical point of view, and the release of the documentation, the processing of the documentation. We've seen some fantastic work in the last couple of months, even just from Owen O'Shea here in the county on the Ballymackenzie ambush, which was something that hadn't really been covered in the 100 years after it occurred, and now his recent work on the Civil War, which is adding to an understanding of what people went through, especially in the aftermath of the Civil War. From the point of view of the commemorations themselves, it's been a kind of a strange one. The government is by and large, and possibly it was for the best, they've kind of sat back from any dealings with any of the major commemorations.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Whether that's because they're burned after the potential RIC commemoration that was going to occur there during the commemorations of the War of Independence, or because the events are just too kind of controversial to touch. I'm not too sure. It's been an interesting one from that point of view.
Yeah. Jim Coonan, what's your view on how it's been handled?
Well, I like that and everything else. I think myself that it's been handled reasonably okay, you know, fairly well. Like, but just to reiterate again, going back to the actual ambushes, which I actually forgot, Jerry, was there was actually five thatched houses inside in Dernefin, and there was IRA soldiers in every house, and three of the houses inside there. Three of the houses were belonged to the O'Briens. I'm going to give them a minute. Three of the houses were belonged to the O'Briens. One was belonged to the Taylors, and one was belonged to the Foleys. Now, the Foleys have disappeared out of that valley. But the Taylors and the O'Briens are still there. And we were organising this thing for the last 2 months, and we could not have got more help and respect and the way they treated us and the way, what they're doing for us, they're actually leaving us to go up through their property and their land on Sunday, and they were going to put the fire down on the original house where the lads were shot, and we're going to have light refreshments there, and not only that, but we're going to have music there as well, the accordion and all that, so it'll make a very good day.
Yeah. And you look, you met an older lady while tending the monument. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, we about a month ago we were below cleaning it all up, and this old lady, she was with her grandson, and she just pulled up in her car, and I just gave her a time, and she said, "It's great what you're doing there," she said. And I said, "Yeah, it's great." I said, "Look, they had an idea of a United Ireland. They were Republicans," I said, "and they died for their cause." Oh, she said, "Yeah, that's true," she said, "but not only that," she said, "it's good," she said, "to remember, because it could happen again." And I kind of was dubious, and I said to her, "Well, I don't think that, ma'am." Well, she said, "Hold on a minute," she said, "they taught that in Ukraine as well."
They did.
I thought it was very good.
Thought it would never happen.
So it's good to remember. Like, no one wants to go around dancing around the place, but in all fairness, it is good to remember, especially within 100 years anniversary.
Yeah, certainly is. And listen, Jim, when did you first, I suppose, no, actually, next question I want to ask is to both of you. I'll start with you, James. The arrangements for Sunday, what's going to happen? It's 3 p.m. and where exactly is it for people who don't know the area?
So Jim has been kind of leading a lot of the work, and I suppose just in relation to your last question, what I should also say is the National Graves Association and individual members like Jim, individual members of the community who want to keep the history alive, they're also driving these events, and yes, they should be given tremendous credit. So yeah. Jim has taken the lead kind of on the arrangements and has invited the Nagle family on board, and we're absolutely delighted and honoured to be made a part of this.
Sure. So Jim, how will it work on Sunday?
Well, basically, Joey, at before 3 o'clock, you just you go into Killoglan, and roundabout is facing you after passing the Lown Bridge. You turn left, we'll have a sign posted. You turn left, you go out the road, it's just about 200 metres, and there's a right turn for Glencairn. You keep going all the way up into Glencairn. You can't miss it. It's well before you come to the Climbers Inn, it's on the side of the road, and there'll be plenty of signage, and there'll be plenty of people there to direct traffic as well. What's going to happen after that then is there'll be the laying of the reeds, there's a flagpole, and the Irish flag will be hoisted, it'll be at half mass. There will be an accordion player there, which was a Ballyseedy cross on that Sunday, and he'd play the national anthem. And my Auntie Carmel, which is the only living person, the closest one to the Conway O'Connors, the only one left, she will lay a reed, and Nagles will lay a reed as well. And after the speeches, Dr. Tim Horgan will be the main speaker. And after that, then we'll proceed up to the house where there's two crosses, the exact spot where the lads first fell after being shot.
Yes, okay, and you know the spot, so you'll be able to go
it's marked, Jolly, with crosses as well.
Ah, yes, okay, all right. Well, look, the weather's going to be witty, I'd say.
Yeah, it's looking good. They're looking down at us, Jolly.
Fair play. And listen, look, guys, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about it, and the very best of luck on Sunday. Just one final point, Jim. This was it, really, for the Civil War in Kerry, wasn't it? The last major engagement,
it
anyway.
It was the last major engagement. The cave and causeway was more a siege. I have Ryle Dwyer here in front of me 30 years ago, and he made it quite clear that it was the last major engagement, the last major big gun battle that occurred in the actual Civil War in Kerry.
All right, well, listen, it's an interesting one, and thanks so much for talking to us, both of you, and coming into us this morning. That is Jim Coonahan there, who's grandnephew of William Conway O'Connor, and James Nagle, a grandnephew of George Nagle. Both men were killed in that activity, in that action.